Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome back to War Stories. I'm your host, Fletch Fletcher, and I'm sitting here with Zohan. You guys know Zohan from the Manstalgia podcast. What's up, dude?
Nothing much. How you doing?
Pretty good. I'm still the king of useless information. I'm still a retired cop, and I still haven't seen The Notebook.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know.
Very, very.
Everybody's still trying to get me to see it. Your buddy that was on the show, he was like, "Do you see it yet?" I'm like, "No, I'm not."
You'll see it one day. You're going to see it.
No,
one
it's
day.
It's a matter of pride now at this point.
We'll see.
Why?
Yeah, we'll see.
Why? Why would you see The Notebook?
It was a good movie.
Oh,
you saw
okay.
The Notebook?
I'm wondering where this notebook is.
Yeah.
Where is it? A notebook here somewhere? I see a pad of paper, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, no, there's a movie called The Notebook, and the running gag is...
He's pretending.
I am literally the most masculine person at this table. I'm the only one that doesn't know there's a movie called The Notebook.
Yeah, I've lost a little bit of man points by the fact that I know what it is. But no, I've still never seen it. So anyway, what's up, Zohan? How's everything going?
Nothing. Wait, what?
How's everything going?
Everything's going great.
Good. That's what I want to hear.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Hey, if you got me all fucked up now.
It's the mustache.
It is a mustache.
I keep thinking about the mustache.
You do have a powerful Freddy. For those of you who've seen his stories on the Instagram.
He doesn't. He thinks he does.
It is not a Tom Selleck mustache.
If it keeps getting commented on, it's got to be pretty powerful. Because everyone keeps... talking about
I think
it.
It's more dirty than powerful.
Distracting, maybe.
Yes, that's distracting.
It's distracting me. I can't even talk right now.
Right.
Thank you.
And of course, you're hearing Salty back with us as always. I'll have you on as many times as you want to come on.
Well, you keep on showing up at my house.
That's what she said.
We keep scheduling it for here. We can schedule it wherever you want. Let's schedule it for a bar if it was quiet. But
that's true.
The quiet bar is not a fun
that's
bar.
That's true.
And then our guest for this episode of War Stories is JR, how are you, JR?
I'm well. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And now you know both of these two rat turds, right?
I do. I know this one when he had a mustache like this one. Before
Wait, this one
this
being
one
whoa,
was like,
whoa,
this
whoa, one whoa.
So the gray beard had a mustache.
No. That was like 2 weeks in.
Well, yeah, for me, it was like that.
This is a weekend.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Job.
Yeah. So tell us about your background. How did we end up getting you here?
Well, I was walking by, and dinner smelled wonderful.
So it was wonderful.
It was wonderful. Dinner was wonderful.
Thank you.
You know, I've been friends with Salty for, good God, 21 years.
We're old.
21 years.
Your friendship is old enough to drink.
Yeah, right. Barely.
Yeah.
Barely.
Yeah.
Barely, and probably just as sloppy. but, you know, I was born and raised in the South, obviously. That's why I talk like this.
Yep.
I escaped, and it's not as bad as it used to be. I escaped in 1987.
Okay.
The Marine Corps gave me a home. And after 6 years there, Camp Pendleton said you can have an airplane ticket to Louisiana, or you can have $350 in cash. And here I am,
$350 later.
Yes, ma'am. So I've been here, and the Los Angeles Police Department said, "Hey, we need a few good turds," and I was one. And that's been almost 25 years now.
Now, do you have like a family history in law enforcement, or did you just enjoy carrying a gun and want to keep it going?
You know what? Ironically enough, my grandfather was a state trooper in Louisiana.
Okay.
My great grandfather was a city policeman in the city that I grew up in. His badge number was 8.
Damn.
Yeah, it was single digits.
That's legit.
When he was hired, he had to buy his own buttons and his own gun.
Wow.
And that was it. Everything else, they just literally wore civilian clothes, and they sewed their police buttons on their jackets.
Wait, they just wore civvies with
whatever clothes you had, you sewed the police buttons onto your clothes, and that was your uniform.
That's wild.
That was your uniform.
Wow.
I told them I worked with a guy who had become a cop back east somewhere, Ohio or whatever, and he was on the job for almost like six or nine months. He was on the job pushing a black and white before he ever even went to an academy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just bizarre when you hear that kind of stuff.
Times have changed.
Yeah. Times have changed.
Yeah. A little bit,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, did you guys come on, because you both, you know, obviously you're still with LAPD, if we can say that, and then you retired from LAPD. When you guys came on, were they still swearing people in day one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And swearing at us still. They don't do that anymore.
You're not allowed to do that. Which is...
No, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
It's not like the dirtbags are going to just be super nice to you on the street. It's so sensitive.
No, we were bona fide cops from day like one or two, right?
Yeah. So you've been with LAPD 25 years, you said?
This July will be 25 years.
Okay.
25 years.
What can you say what assignment you're in?
Let's just say it's a special assignment. It is very special, okay. And we do have weapons, and we also have tactics.
Well, I like that.
We do. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then I think if you can't figure out what we're talking about, you just turn off the show right now. Just turn it off.
That's on you.
That's your problem.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you being here. So what's your story?
Well, you know, I put some thought into it, 30, 45 seconds worth, and I kind of like some of my Marine Corps stories, believe it or not.
Let's do it.
I think there's still some litigation pending on some of the other stuff, and nobody wants that.
Statute of limitations.
Nobody wants that. But, you know, everybody knows the story of Black Hawk Down.
Right.
You know, but I think what a lot of people don't understand or maybe has been lost in translation or history is how we got there. And what happened?
It wasn't in a Black Hawk?
No, it wasn't actually. You know, we didn't have those. But you know, I remember I was actually in Japan at the time, and right around Christmas in 1992, they said, "Hey, we need some volunteers to go to Africa." And I'm like, "Well, I've never been to Africa, so I'll go."
Okay.
Went over there with 1st Marine Division. I was an intel guy at the time.
Is that the big red one?
That's an army division. So army. I'll be leaving now.
Oh no, I don't know. I'm honestly asking.
I was like, five minutes.
I'll cut it out. No, what's the? Isn't there a Marine division that's a one?
It is, and that is 1st Marine Division. It says Guadalcanal on the patch.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, so there is two big red ones. It's just one is the Marines and the other one is the Army.
Right.
The
big red one, I think, is the 1st Infantry Division.
Yeah. Okay, so I didn't know that that was the actual title. Yeah.
I was just
referring to the patch.
Yeah. He's trying to back out of it.
I know.
No,
right?
I'm just curious. Right.
I'm enjoying every second.
Edumacate me.
Backstroke.
Yeah, that's actually their nickname, I believe.
Yeah,
Big Red One.
Oh.
Yeah.
Germany.
Lee Marvin, the movie.
Yeah.
Right? There's a movie called The Big Red
there
One.
Most
I love
is.
Lee Marvin, so I'm going to have
wait a minute. Wait a minute. I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. You know about a movie called The Notebook, but you,
thank you
don't know about The Big Red One.
Thank
correct.
You.
Correct.
Wow.
My work is done.
Yeah, you've exposed it all.
It's all
pull the curtain back.
Being ripped away.
Pull the curtain back. No,
but to
out.
Be fair, I haven't seen either of those movies. So once I see
he's
the
lead, still
not
backpedaling.
Not helping. No. That is not helping.
That's an Olympic event. Backstroke.
Okay, so you're with 1st Marine Division.
1st Marine Division.
You did not go to Guadalcanal.
Did
you
not.
You went to Africa.
I did go to Africa. Okay. So it was a weird place. It was, you know, people ask me, they're like, what was it like? And I go, well, just imagine South Central Los Angeles with no electricity. It was a bad place. Ooh. In the mid 80s. How's that? South Central in the mid 80s. All the glass is broken. Yeah. There's bullet holes in everything.
Yeah.
It was just literally the most hellacious place you've ever seen in your life.
Yikes.
People dying left, right, and center. You know, water holes where they're basically taking, you know, babies that are dying and they're burying them, you know, in the ground right next to their water supply and everything else. And there are people from all over the world, and they're called NGOs, non-governmental organizations, you know, UN, UNICEF,
okay,
the High Commission for Refugees. And they go into this vacuum, this power vacuum in East Africa, and try to stop a famine. Because these warlords, Muhammad Idid, which is one of the primary characters from the Black Hawk Down movie, has started basically this clan warfare. And it's a weird place because literally you are mortal enemies from people who aren't from your clan. So it's almost like where I'm from, you know, the Hatfields and McCoys kind of a thing, right. where just because you're who you are, I'm going to kill you.
So it is gang warfare.
It is literally gang warfare.
It's just they're identifying based on a family clan versus
exactly, or literally. Okay. So these people are dying literally on the number of 10,000 a day. I mean, just a magnitude you can't imagine.
Oh. Damn. Is that that's not continent wide? That's countrywide.
That's pretty much in a city. So if you can imagine, the capital city of Mogadishu in Somalia was pretty much the epicenter for this whole thing.
10,000 people.
10,000 people a day. Just. Wow.
That's staggering.
It's incomprehensible.
So it's just one constant gun battle rolling constantly.
They were, pretty much. Yeah. You know, you've all seen the movie. You've seen the technicals with the Toyota pickup trucks with you know, the machine guns and the 40-millimeter cannons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just a rolling gun battle all day long.
And how do you know who's, how do they know who's who in the zoo?
Why's it got to be a zoo?
That sounds like a zoo.
It does.
Actually, it sounds like a zoo without any fences. Yeah,
frankly, it's, and I think you hit the nail on the
head. It's the wild animal park in San Diego.
When you said gang warfare, just like what we're used to, you know, with the gangs of South Central, you know by the neighborhood.
Oh, just
by, you know who's who. You know who's who, you know.
And do they have identifying? Like, are there some gangs that wear... Or some clans that wear certain things or dress a certain way or anything like that? Or is it just, like you said, by region?
I think it was mainly by region and by association. Mm-hmm. So the IDEED's group was called the USC, which I thought was hilarious.
Okay.
The United Somali Congress. So they would literally, like, graffiti walls and things with USC. So everything, you know, of course, every time we had a chance, we would put an M, you know, in the middle of it. So it was just like our little X out of their gang sign was a little M in there. But, you know, so our job was to go in there basically as a police force and stop this death. They were so, like, for instance, let's say UNICEF was going to bring in, like, a grain shipment on a ship into the port. Well, it would get seized by these warlords in the port, and it would never get passed out, you know, to the people that needed it.
Right.
So they're just, like I said, they're dying on a biblical scale.
Wow.
It was something. And for a 19, 20, 21-year-old boy from the South who never went hungry more than, you know, maybe a day because I pissed off my dad, it was something.
Wow.
So we get in, and I don't know if you guys remember, but it was probably one of the first times that we saw special forces on TV.
Okay.
Because there was so much media in the city that when President Bush decided to land the SEALs, the media was literally on the beach filming these guys as they're swimming up out of the surf. So that was like, okay, that's your first clue that your invasion's not going well when the media is already there waiting for you. Your secret is not going to go
Your secret operation is not so secret.
not so much.
Wait right here. They're coming. Just give it a minute.
So that was our first clue that, okay, this is not going to go like we hope. But so we get there and we relieve the invaders, for lack of a better term, and we take over the U.S. Embassy. And the U.S. Embassy was... It was an embassy. I mean, it was a multi-building compound that had literally been destroyed. Mortar fire, anything you can imagine. And then we start moving out into the city, and our mission was to tell these clans, look, you have a certain number of days to take all of your weapons and put them in what we're going to call cantonment areas. Because what we didn't want to do is go in and take all the guns, because now you're creating a power vacuum when we leave.
Right.
Because contrary to what the Democrats think, you do need guns to establish order and law and order in a country.
Really?
Can I say that?
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want.
Are there any Democrats in here?
No.
No?
Stoning.
Let's talk about them. So we basically said, look, okay, this area is for you. This area is for you. This area is for you. Get all your guns and stick them in that area, or we're going to come take them from you. And that's what we did. So after a couple of weeks there...
So you acted like a bunch of Democrats.
We did. Yeah. But it was for their own good.
Right.
So... There was a task force formed, and it was called Task Force Mogadishu, because we're not very creative. And I was the intelligence chief for that task force. So my job...
What is an intelligence chief?
So my job was basically to collect intelligence through human intelligence, which is where we'd actually go out and talk to people.
Snitches.
Snitches get stitches. We used some other methods of signals intelligence where we could actually listen to radio broadcasts and things like that, you know, by the quote-unquote enemy. And then, you know, mapping and things like that to try to figure out where all these weapons were. And then a lot of it was just trying to figure out, if I can use your phrase, who's who in the zoo.
Right.
Yeah. You know, who are the political players? Who do we want to back? You know, who do we want to take this place over? Who is is going to be the best guy?
Right. Who's the
lesser of all evils.
The lesser of all evils. Yeah. Exactly. Which you would think after ever how many hundreds of years being the United States, we would know that that never works.
Right.
So
we need an all new asset.
Right. Right. So once we kind of figured all out that, the fun started. And we would go out every night, and we would just roll around in our armored convoys. That's a joke because Hummers didn't have armor at the time. It was
really? Yeah. Okay.
We would go out, and we'd look for these guys, and we would, you know, take their guns from them. And sometimes we got into gunfights, and sometimes we didn't. And it was an interesting time. We learned pretty quickly that most of the, I think they call them MAMs now, right? Military age males. They would chew a substance called cot. And it was basically,
it's like a drug.
It's a drug, right? Yeah. It's like a leaf, like a cocaine leaf or something.
Still around.
It is, yeah.
JR, I don't mean to cut you off. No. So prior to you guys starting to actually start your mission,
right?
And you guys propose this to these groups, what is their reaction to this? Is it more like, okay, yeah, we'll do it, and then they just don't do it? Or
is it like Sparta, come and get them?
Come and get
them. Yeah, like how does that happen?
Well, it's... Obviously, that was happening way above my level.
Sure.
You know, I was cleaning my rifle while all this shit was going on.
Yeah.
But so the Marine Corps has something called MPS shipping, and it's maritime preposition shipping. So out in the ocean are these squadrons of container ships that have tanks and trucks and rockets and bombs and machine guns and everything else on them. So when we go places, these ships meet us. So we just send the people. Whereas, like, the Army, like, flies all their stuff, I think, places. Mm-hmm. So when these MPS ships start landing brand new Abrams tanks and Amtraks and all these heavily armored vehicles, they accepted our deal.
Okay.
Yeah, it went okay. But, you know, being a UN mission, we took the tanks off, and then we put all the main gun ammo back on the ships.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Right.
You know, so we're just basically rolling around in the 72 Beetle with no...
Wow.
We'll get to that later.
It's good when you give a tidbit of information like, yeah, our tanks didn't have any main gun rounds. Yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
So at first it went well. I think, they kind of went, okay, these guys mean business. We're going to throw these stuff into cantonment zones and cantonment areas. And we're going to be passive for a little while, but just like, you know, like a gang injunction, for lack of a better term, when it first, you know, hits the street, everybody's like, whoa, this is a powerful document. This is going to hold us in check. And then they start ticking their heads out.
Right.
And they go, yeah, no, fuck you.
There's a little bit of a chilling effect. And the next thing you know, they're poking at the fence trying to see where the holes are.
Right. And the reality of it is these guys are savages. You know, you can't negotiate with savages. You just can't.
No.
I mean, they're killing literally their neighbors. They're killing their own kids. They're allowing their people to die.
Right.
You know, for nothing. I mean, they're fighting over
wheat.
You know, it's like nothing.
You talk about Mad Max. I mean, that's a post. It's a post-apocalyptic world without the apocalypse.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But in their mind, it was, you know, some political
Tuesday.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
So we kind of started doing our thing, and the cool thing about the task force was we had tanks, we had Amtraks, which is the amphibious tractors, which are basically tanks that can swim. We had snipers, we had infantry guys, we had all kinds of different Marine elements inside this task force, and so we had a pretty good, you know, pretty strong fist, so to speak. And one of my favorite stories was we would go out with the snipers, and because the snipers were an intelligence asset, I would go with them,
right?
Because I didn't want to sit in the soccer stadium all day. So we'd go out overnight and do our thing. And we had a guy, this little area we were going to hit, and two or three of the snipers and myself got on top of this roof, and there was a cistern on this roof. So it's basically like a big concrete bathtub that would collect rainwater. So we're standing in this cistern, and it's high enough that you can put your elbows up on the lodge or the wall there, and I'm watching through binoculars. And if you've ever watched anything at long range through binoculars, it's almost like you're watching it on television, because it's 1,200 yards away, and it's almost like animated, right?
Right.
So here comes this brand new bright green Abrams tank across this this rolling hillside, heading towards this little village where they're going to just, you know, lay waste to this place that's been shooting at people. And you see this guy come running out of a little hooch, and he's got a rocket propelled grenade. And he gets up on that RPG, and he sights that thing down at that tank, and then you just see the 50 cal rounds from the tank just start walking across the ground. And it's like, oh yeah, this is gonna hurt. And when that first round hit that dude, it spun him literally backwards. I mean, he did a complete backflip. I'm like, that's pretty cool. Right. But you're so removed from it, right, it's like, sure, you're watching it on TV, right? So RPG hits the ground, tank stops. You know, grunts are moving around. You see another guy come running out of the same hooch, you know. And this is before we called them skinnies. I think that was an army thing when they started calling them skinnies. We just called them little guys. So the second little guy comes out. Now the snipers are getting all excited. They're like, okay, I'm going to get this guy. And they're getting the rifles going. And he picks the RPG up. He throws it on his shoulder. And here it comes again. Boom, 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 boom. Right across the ground. Hits him and just pulverizes him. I'm like, okay, there's two.
Not the sharpest tools in the
world. Right. Well, now.
Well, they have more people than
They have more people. So here comes
number. But they got more bullets.
It's true.
So here comes number three, right? He comes running out. He looks at the RPG. He looks at the pulverized mess of his friends that is all over the ground. And he just like shakes his head. And he just kind of runs off. He's
there was a smart one.
I am out of here.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. So that was a pretty good one. And, you know, we had a night where, for some reason, the Army decided they were going to put their depot-level maintenance facility across the street from one of these cantonment areas.
Sure.
And the Somalis are like, hey.
I'm sorry. They said, hey, let's set up shop across the street from where we told them to take all their guns.
Exactly. Hey, I don't make the rules. I don't know how to explain this stuff. I'm just telling you what happened, pal.
Got it.
Yes. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Perfect sense.
Yeah. So, you know, the Somalis are like, hey, we got way too many mortar rounds. Every other night or so, let's just throw some of them over there. So that's what they did. About every other night, you know, a couple of mortar rounds into the Army compound, and the Marines are like, well, we just can't have this. This just won't do.
So impolite.
Yeah. So they call us. They say, guys, come help, come help. Or something like that. Something like that.
That's fair.
I don't know exactly what
I'm paraphrasing.
I don't know exactly. I wasn't on the radio. So, you know, a couple of snipers and myself, we get on the roof of this three-story building, and we have a guy. He's not a disgraced pilot in the Marine Corps, but he's like it's an extra duty called a FAC. It's a forward air controller.
Okay.
Because generally speaking, Marines aren't bright enough to talk to helicopters and airplanes.
Okay.
So we have to bring one of the guys that speaks their language to do that for us. And we just point and go, oh, kill. And then he gets on the radio and tells them how to do it.
A bunch of, like, yeah, he's, technical jargon.
You know, missiles, sure, and rockets and things. So we've got this FAC, his radio operator, myself, and three snipers on this roof. And we sit there all night long. And I don't know if you've ever been to East Africa, but it's very coastal, very humid, and it just started raining. And it rained all night long. And it was bad. But we're watching these bozos all night. And sun comes up. Here comes the sun. All awesome. And here comes the cavalry. Some of those bright green, brand new Imran Abrams are coming from one side. The Amtraks are coming from the other side.
And playing right of the Valkyries.
Exactly. Right. It was going in my head anyway. Mm-hmm. And then here comes Marine Air. Two Cobra gunships and a Huey, a UH-1, which I think it the whiskey model at the time or something. So they're coming across from right to left, and the FAC's talking to them, jibber-jabber, kind of like Top Gun, like we were talking earlier. Sure. I don't know. They Goose, you got this, right, or something. I don't know.
Calling balls. And
so, yeah, balls, Roger balls, whatever. Yeah, sure. So the Somalis are like, oh, this just won't do. Because
now you're being impolite.
Exactly. In addition to those mortar rounds, we have anti-aircraft fire and anti-aircraft rounds that we don't need. Nice. So we're going to give those to you.
Right.
So they get on this 23-millimeter dual anti-aircraft gun, and they just start shooting at these helicopters. And the helicopters are, we're out at the edge of the city, and there's just nothing. There's no cover. There's nothing. There's no land for them to hide behind. But there is a three-story building that we're on the roof.
I was going to say.
Oh, yeah, shit.
I seem to recall somebody being on the roof of a three-story building.
So these guys are like, hey, over there. And they come over, and these guys are hovering behind this three-story building and putting us between them and the 23-millimeter gun.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how big a 23-millimeter green tracer is, but it's larger than my head. And they were coming at us, and I was just like, oh, this is just not good. This isn't good. So boom, boom, boom. The rounds are hitting the hitting the building.
Now I got to cut you off ask you.
Yep.
What? I dare to ask this. What goes through your mind when you realize that you are now the only three or four people that are just meat shields for two gunships?
And ironically enough, I was looking for the reenlistment counselor. I'm like, this is the shit right here, buddy. If the career planner was right here, I'd be signing my name, man. Fuck yeah, sign me up, buddy. Yeah, well, you know, you're 20. Remember that 21 we're talking about? Yeah, dumb. And yeah,
you got zero fucks.
Yeah,
right?
Right. So these
got such a big boner right now. Oh,
yeah. So we have one of the snipers has this thing called a Barrett 50 cal.
Yep.
I've only seen this thing being carried around. I've never witnessed it actually being fired.
At the time,
right.
And is there like a glow around it as people walk around?
A halo.
Like a halo?
You're not actually allowed to walk within like 7 feet of it.
Are you really?
Because you could feel the heat.
You could feel the heat.
Yeah.
Oh. But the irony of it is the littlest guy in the sniper platoon was the guy that carried the 50 cal. This guy was like 5'4", weighed like 135 pounds.
That's awesome.
He's the same size as the rifle.
And they had a 6'4" Native American dude who had like a little M40. And you look at him, and you're like, what? And never mind. It worked.
It's the same guy that put the depot across the street from the Contominate.
Probably the same guy. So these jackasses are shooting at the building. They don't even know we're there because we're down like behind little parapets and stuff. And this young Lance Corporal decides, you know what? It's time to unleash the beast. I'm going to start shooting this 50. Well, the 50 has this massive muzzle brake on it. That is actually canted at about probably a 20-degree angle. So left side goes up, right side goes down. The roof of this building is gravel. You see where I'm going with this?
I see the right side of it.
Starting to paint a mental picture here.
So everybody's watching. Kaboom! That 50 goes off, and it looks like a sandstorm on top of that roof. So I got a lovely facial and a little pumice stone going there. And I'm like, okay, now this sucks. This is not fun anymore. I don't care that they're shooting 20-millimeter freaking tracers at us, but this guy just tried to blow my face.
Don't do that again.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Take that gun from him.
Right.
So the gunships are like, okay, well, we've got missiles. So here's what we're going to do. So one of the main anti-tank missiles in the American inventory is called a TOW. Well, TOW stands for... I forgot. The O stands for optically guided or optically sighted, and the W stands for wire guided.
Yeah.
And that will be important in a moment.
Okay.
And that wire is made of platinum. I didn't know that at the time. Tube launched. That's what the T stands
tube
for.
Launched, tube launched.
Optically sighted, wire guided.
Okay.
Something like that. So these Cobras decide, hey, we've got more TOWs than we know what to do with. So they're popping up over the building, and they're shooting these TOW missiles across the top of the building, trying to hit this anti-aircraft.
Again, this is the building you're on top of, so you now have TOW missiles going right over your head.
It is.
Okay.
So as this wire spools out of the backside of the missile, it just lands on us. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. Why do we have these wires? This is like piano wire. I could make a banjo out of this later or something. But it's the little things that you remember in like these hellacious moments of I could die right now, but oh look, a wire.
You know? Neat.
Yeah. And the fax looking at us because we're just having a good time. He's like, these guys are idiots because he's got a college degree and stuff. Yeah. And he's smarter than we are. So yeah, after a couple of TOWs, kind of landed in and amongst their mitts, they decided, oh, that wasn't such a good idea after all. So they gave up and off we went. But it was a good time. It really was. It was one of those formative experiences, I think, for young men. And then we left in June of '93, and
so total you were there.
Let's see, about just 6.5 months.
Okay,
maybe 7 months, right before Christmas in '92. Left in June of '93, and then that's when everything went to shit.
Well, it's because you left.
It's funny you mentioned that. But it's that's when things got really bad. Right after we left it in the hands of the UN. And
say no more.
It's your first mistake.
The Pakistanis and the Italians, and I don't know if you guys remember, but there was an Italian checkpoint that was attacked, and I think I'm going to make up a number and say 7 or 11 Italian paratroopers were killed.
Wow!
Just basically massacred at this checkpoint, and that's when President Clinton now had been elected. And his national security people said, hey, let's go in there and quash this place. And we're like, well, we already quashed it. And
it was quashed when we left, guys.
It was quashed, right? And then, you know, the Task Force Ranger goes in and they bring in, you know, the Delta Boys and everything. And then you had Black Hawk Down. That was the culmination of that whole thing. And, you know, everybody's seen the book or read the book and seen the movie. And the movie actually gave me chills the first time I saw it because some of the things, the scenes and the how they were able to create some of the famine and things like that, of that place. But it's funny, here we are 26 years later for me, mm-hmm. and this is fucking me up, dude. It's like I'm living this for, yeah. you know, all over again. Yeah. But we laugh about it, and I think that's how we deal with this kind of stuff, you know, as manly men.
Well, I mean, I think if we laugh about it, we don't cry about it, right?
Yeah.
And then sometimes we just
do both.
right.
Sometimes we lose the ability to cry, and but, you know, we share these things with each other. But what's funny is, and we talked about this on, I think, our first episode and maybe subsequent, but have you noticed, like, when you sit around and we were sitting here talking about this, and we've all kind of experienced kind of similar circumstances where, you know, the shit hits the fan, and you said, this is cool. You know, you have that, we've talked about the moment of clarity where you're just like, well, okay, time to make the donuts, for lack of a better phrase. But if you talk about this to other people, they look at you funny.
Right.
They look at you weird.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they can't wrap their mind around the fact that you have seen and been a part of these things. And it seems to be a combination of, like, kind of awe and horror at the same time. It's like, I'm in awe that you were capable of that, but I'm in horror that
you're capable
you can
of
talk
that.
About it, right. and right. like it, you know, you're talking about it. So you're talking about watching these guys get hit with the 50 cal and being spun around. If you haven't seen that happen, you don't know how you're going to react.
No, and I think that your brain has defense mechanisms for those kinds of things, and I think humor is, for me, humor is the one. I mean, that is the one that I turn to, and it's usually inappropriate, but it's the one that's probably saved my life. I mean, and I say that on an emotional and a mental level. It's probably, you know, the one thing that I think we as police officers and military folks and just, you know, people of that caliber in general, that's what we share. You know, and when you try to, people give it a name, you know, dark humor, this, that, and the other thing. It's like, no, it's just funny shit, dude.
Yeah, gallows humor, yeah, tombstone humor, yeah, no, it's just dark humor, all that. Okay, great. You want to name it, but it's basically coping.
Exactly.
We're just, you know, seeing the humor in something that's awful.
Right.
And if you can't do that, you'll probably self-destruct.
Yeah.
Probably self-destruct. And you shouldn't be in the military or a firefighter or a police officer.
Well, you know, firefighters, that's a whole other. Well,
see?
They're not here either, are they?
No, but we did have one on, and he left us. The episode hasn't aired yet as of when this is out, but he left us speechless. He told us a story.
Oh, really?
All three of it, I'll tell you about it off mic, but okay. it literally left us speechless. But as we're talking about it, have you I'm guessing, mm-hmm. don't just wander around telling Somalia stories.
Only if there's wait, my girlfriend's over there. Never mind. Only if there's single women that I think might impress them. So, you know, no, generally no. But, you know, you reserve those stories, I think, for the right crowd.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to go to, you know, a 4-H meeting or something, or go to church and I'd burst into flames. But I'm not going to go in the wrong crowd and tell that unless I know it's going to be accepted by the people that are there.
Sure.
You know, it's just, I think that's another coping mechanism too. You know, you want to make sure that the people that you're talking to can relate. And the funny part about it is, if you think about it, how many times have you been in one of those crowds where you started to tell a cop story, and as soon as you finish, or a war story, for lack of a better term, if I can use the term, as soon as you're done, the guy to your left starts telling one.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he's done, the guy across from him starts telling one.
It's like the crack in the dam.
It is. It is. Because everybody's got them.
Right.
And everybody wants to share, but they want to make sure they're sharing it with like-minded people that are going to accept them.
You're we all as humans yearn to belong to a club, a clan. We all group together, and you get, you know, military guys and cops and, you know, people that have seen the shitty part of humanity firsthand from the, you know, from the business end of a rifle, right, as opposed to, you know, just standing to the side and watching. You know, it's like sports. If you've played football and you talk to somebody else who's played football, you're going to talk about football differently than you would if you just grew up watching it,
right,
and you're talking to somebody who played it. Mm-hmm. But my question was then, if you, from watching that stuff, because you said, you know, it still gets to you talking about it. You spent 6.5 months there.
Right.
In the grand scheme of things, that's a drop in the bucket of your life.
Yes.
But the things you did and saw in that 6.5 months affected you for the rest of your life. It changed you.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Right? Yes.
So if you go home 6 months, you know, 6 months later, you spend some time in Somalia, you basically handle the situation, mm-hmm, you watch it go to shit, and then you see other people have to go clean up the mess.
Right.
Does that affect you? Do you?
It does, and it's, you don't feel like a failure because obviously you didn't make the decision, you know, to leave or to leave your business unfinished.
Right.
And frankly, when you're 22, 23, 24 years old, you just go where you're told.
You're not thinking that far.
Exactly. Yeah. But when you're 40,
right,
you know, and you look back and you go, man, we should have stayed. We could have done this. We could have done that. We could have done, right, the other thing. And I can't even begin to imagine what this generation is feeling with these wars that have been going on for 15 years now, 16 years. I don't even know anymore.
It's a perpetual state.
Mm-hmm. And I can't even imagine, you know, I can't even imagine how they're feeling and what they're experiencing. You know, and yeah, I had my six and a half months, and these kids are going for, you know, a year, 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 12 and 13 times over the course of a career. I just can't even begin to imagine, you know, what some of those guys are going through.
Well, it's a lot like, it seems to me, and again, I was caught, but I was never in the military, you know, the Hamburger Hill,
right,
incident, you know, the number of the hill escapes me, but, you know, fight for a week,
right,
to get to the top of the hill, lose countless buddies trying to get there, and then when you get to the top, okay, that was great, yeah, let's move,
right,
wait, what, yeah, we don't need this,
yeah,
we're just going to go somewhere, mm-hmm, else, and only to have it be retaken, right,
yeah.
So I can imagine it seems like it would be a similar frustration,
yeah,
only writ large.
Well, and writ globally.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can experience it, because how many times have you arrested a guy and you go to court and he walks,
okay,
out the back,
right,
door?
Yeah.
So you're seeing it almost on a more personal level, because,
right,
it's affecting you as an individual, because literally it was an action that you took that was rendered, you know, useless.
Yeah.
By mm-hmm, the system, quote,
pretty
unquote,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to you just being a member of,
right,
that organization.
Right.
So I think in some ways, for me, in law enforcement, it's even more personal.
It's worse. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
because then you sit there and go,
I did my end of it.
Right.
And now the
now
second
the
half of it let
me down.
Exactly.
Yeah. And actually, you,
and that's constant.
You were asked to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
To you know, basically have the door slammed in your face.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'd like you to go out and arrest all these people and make the community safe. By the way, we're completely not going to help you by doing our end of the job and locking them,
right,
up and making,
right,
sure they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you met, well, the victims. You know, went into the house,
yeah,
and you see the beaten kid or the beaten wife or,
right,
the stabbed wife, and you take the can we say asshole?
No,
you
say asshole.
You take the asshole to jail, and then, you know, a year later he's back in the same house.
Right.
You know,
here?
I'm exaggerating.
Jeez.
You know. So I think we're just drawing another one of those parallels where we have the same experiences, but as police officers, I think they're more personal personally. Can you say personally?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I think it's more personal. But.
Yeah, I've often said the biggest frustration, and I didn't say it first, but the biggest frustration I had was seeing a bad guy, you know, is going to do bad guy shit, but there's nothing you can do about it,
right,
until he does bad guy shit and creates a victim. Now you have a victim, I can do something.
Right.
Or seeing a victim that is putting themselves in a position to be a victim,
right,
and no matter how much you tell them, hey, if you keep doing, you know, it's like the kid with the penny and the light socket. I wouldn't do that if it's, oh, well, there it is.
Yeah.
You know, but it's much, like you said, I guess it's much more personal when you see a bad guy and you go, ah, I know he's going to kill somebody.
Right.
I know he's going to, but I am completely powerless to stop it until somebody is dead.
Right.
And you know, the shame about that is it didn't used to be that way.
No.
No, it didn't used to be that way. This is what we are evolving into.
Yeah.
And, man, I don't know what to say.
Real quick, to bring it back to the deployment, you know, it's funny because I'm trying to think, I got back in 2010. So from the time I got out of the military to now, besides myself and the guys that were in my unit, I had never heard anyone from anywhere ever talk about how it made them feel going into a place, risking doing things, losing lives, and then leaving. And then, like, what are your thoughts on that? Because we had, and the reason why I said I haven't heard anything since is because where we were pushing towards the Pakistan border, losing lives, and then when I think it was a year after I was out, they said, this is no longer where we're going to be, so we're just going to give this back to the, well, there was a lot of foreign fighters and things like that out there. We're just going to give it back. And then it was like, so what did we do that for?
Right.
And this
right.
is the first time I've heard someone else say this in, I mean, since I've been in.
Yeah.
And it's 2019 now. So it's crazy. So that's, I've been sitting here kind of quiet, just listening, but it's interesting to hear someone else say it and not from my own experience.
In a different place, in a different era, different generation.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. Different war, different generation, right. different. Yeah. Place in the, but the same experience.
Same experience, yeah.
And but, it's the same thing the NAM guys.
But if you think literally short of World War II, that's been going on ever since.
Correct.
Korea, I mean, we, you know, the army basically took over the entire Korean peninsula.
Right.
And they were told, wait, stop.
Right.
Now go back.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it just rolls back to, and if you look at, you know, who is the real enemy in all this? The real enemy in all this is politicians.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And be they on a local level, state level, federal level, they are the ones that send us as police officers, soldiers, you know, they take the youth of America.
Right.
And they push them out to do their bidding, and they're not committed to it.
Right. They're paying for their sins on the backs of other people's sons.
Exactly.
And daughters.
Exactly.
Now.
And then the ones that survive it, they end up paying for the rest of their lives because of the decisions that they made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. No, exactly.
Or, this is equally prevalent in law enforcement and in the military, is if you do the job they asked you to and then the winds start to change and what you did is no longer popular and they decide that they need to make an example out of you, they will sacrifice you on the altar of political correctness.
And that is becoming more and more prevalent in the military now.
I
mean, look at how many special operations guys now are in prison.
Was it Eddie Gallagher?
Eddie Gallagher.
Yeah. By the way, hashtag free Eddie.
Free Eddie.
Please. You know, what's happening to him is, if you don't know, look him up. Eddie Gallagher. It's unconscionable to me.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's mind-blowing.
He's basically a prisoner of war of his own country.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For doing what his
country trained him to do, to go do. Exactly. Which he did for how long?
And did well.
Right?
Yes.
And he was perfectly fine. Yes. No problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then they come and arrest him out of his clinic, you know, where he's going to get treatment for you know, all the stuff he's got going on, his kids, poor... That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Disgusting. And they had the group of Marines here a few years later that after their multiple year, you know, tribunal and everything else, they were found innocent.
Right.
Mm. You know, and it's like, hey, thanks. You could have just said thanks.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's strange. And I always take it back to movies, but the longer I've done this, the more I start to understand Jack Nicholson's character in A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
Right. Does that not become clearer every day?
It does. And I, you know, as a young man growing up, you see that and, you know, you're supposed to take the side of the lawyer who's saying you shouldn't have hazed this kid and he died and we're going to hold you responsible and he's supposed to be the bad guy. But that speech where he says, I don't want somebody to sleep safely under the blanket I provide and then question the manner in which I provide it.
Correct.
Becomes almost a mantra now.
Right.
I mean, we're seeing that every day.
Mm-hmm.
And how are they going to get people? Okay, so the three of you, right? Three different eras, three different, I mean, we've got JR with Marine Corps experience. You both have LAPD experience. You know, Zohan, you've got Army and police experience. How do you get people to want to do it?
Those days are coming to an end, I think.
We just had that conversation.
I was going to say, I tell people not to.
Right.
I mean, what really... Here's the thing. I really believe nowadays the only reason I got into this job is because of the family I was raised in.
Right.
Because if even one little element was taken out of that, I couldn't have done it.
Right.
There's no way. So when you got guys, I mean, I know you guys see it. You guys see it in really almost every agency. You have the guys that come on now, but you see the guys that they're hiring, they're now being tailored to almost the way that they want this to swing, meaning they would rather have you go hide. They would rather have you just handle your radio calls. They would rather you just lay low and not do anything. But then at the same time, what happens when the shit does hit the fan and now you don't know how to do your job?
Right.
Because you weren't mentally prepared for it. The department didn't mentally prepare you for it. Your background doesn't mentally prepare you for it.
Right.
Physically, you're not prepared for it because that's not even a freaking standard nowadays. That's a whole nother. That's a whole nother topic.
You know, I'll tell you a really quick story, and I think that's
the place for that, right?
Yeah. So I won't use his name or his organization, either one of his organizations, but I have a buddy who was a very highly decorated Marine veteran. He was in charge of a special operations training group. So in other words, he was the guy that taught the badasses how to do badass shit.
Right.
Full career in the Marine Corps. I believe he's a master sergeant when he retired.
Wow.
Came to our department and said, I would like to apply to your department. I would like to bring my experience to your department.
Yeah, you're about to piss me off, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the questions in his background was, have you ever told an off-color joke or used a racial slur?
The Mark Furman clause.
Could you imagine?
Right.
Dude, I was a Marine for 25 years. Every other fucking word out of my mouth was a racial slur or a derogatory term.
Right.
So they're like, off you go. No. No. So he went to another agency who hired him instantly.
Sure.
You know, it's like, here's a uniform. Get your ass out there.
When can you start?
Yeah, exactly. You know, but at the same token, you've got these kids that have never, not you, obviously, who've never changed a flat tire.
Mm.
You know, because, yeah. And I think you hit it right on the nail where that's what they want.
Right.
That's exactly what they want.
100%.
That's exactly what they want.
Mm-hmm. And they're not even trying to hide it. I don't think they're trying to hide it.
No.
No, well, they're not trying to hide it. Mm-hmm. They're pretty clear about it's time to move people out.
Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, maybe some people are a little more insulated right now. But they're coming for everybody.
No, I agree.
Yeah,
they're
coming for everybody. Because even in the... In specialized units, correct me if I'm wrong, specialized unit is in the future going to do what they want you to do, not what needs to be done.
Yes. Yeah, you're definitely going to be a tool for what the political wave wants you to do.
Which is virtually impossible in that world.
Right. Oh, I think so.
Yeah,
I agree.
Well, you're supposed to be the tip of the spear. And they're making you the butt.
Well, in our own minds, I think that that's what, you know, I think that most elite units, and when I say elite units, and I include just your average everyday police officer in that, when I say that, they like to think of themselves as the tip of the spear because you have to.
Yeah.
You would never, ever put on body armor, strap on a gun, and get in a black and white if you went, yeah, I'm a mediocre turd. Right. You just wouldn't go out there and do that because you'd last about a minute.
I think those people do exist though, and then when they get into critical incidents, they don't make entry.
They drop and run.
We see them all the time.
But do they recognize that they're the tip of the spear?
Probably not.
Therein lies the problem.
Yeah. Right.
The two young men in Texas here a couple of weeks ago that their sergeant went to guns on the guy and put him down and they ran. And the chief fired him the next day.
He should. And again, I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking. But the shooting in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, I understand situations are dynamic and they change second to second. I would be really curious to find out how a situation that dynamic that's changing second to second still doesn't cause the officer on scene to do something other than stand in one spot, whatever it is. But it's the conversation we had, which is sometimes you have to make a decision, right? Yeah. You have to make a decision and be able to justify it. It could be the wrong decision, but you took action.
Well, there is an old saying, do something even if it's wrong.
Right. A mediocre plan now is better than a perfect plan tomorrow.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that is probably where my biggest problem is and what I'm trying to instill into my kids. And what even my training officer told me, I tried to tell it to my trainees, which is I'll back you 100%. If you have a reason why you can justify the decision you made, even if it was wrong, I can fix your thinking to change the way you look at the situation so the next time you will make the right decision. But what I can't fix is your inability to make a decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're getting to a point now where, you know, we're all the people that are going to come on this show and tell war stories. There's going to be nobody under the age of 30 that's going to have a war story because they're not going to be allowed to have them.
That's an interesting thought. Mm.
That is an interesting thought. But, you know, I think we're seeing a changing face just of this country when it comes to, and I don't like to talk about blind patriotism, but I think that's the way we were raised. I mean, right. I know a guy who was raised in this country who, because of his religious beliefs, went back to another country and served that country because that's the way he was raised.
Right.
And I think that we're not raising people that way anymore.
No way.
When I came on the job, I had no clue how much money my first paycheck was going to be.
Right. Didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
No.
Right. It didn't matter. It's weird and hokey as it sounds and cornbread as it sounds. Mm-hmm. I wanted to serve people. You know, I didn't care how. That's just what I was going to do.
Yeah, it was one of those, oh, and they're going to pay me for it.
Yeah, they're going to pay me how much?
Right. Well, and there's an interesting, I don't know if you guys even remember this. I certainly don't. I was told it. So maybe you guys do. At some point, there was a Southern California agency, police department, that went to blazers with a crest on the front pocket. Huh? Yeah, blazers. That was their uniform. They initially wore blazers, and instead of a badge, they had a crest somewhere on their front pocket.
Wow.
And they were very, you know, country club type. You know,
had to have hills in the name of the agency.
No, the word valley was in the name of the agency.
Valley. Uh-huh. Wow.
And
oh, spit it out. You can't
me valley.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when valley first started, they were forced to wear blazers.
That's awesome.
With a patch sewn onto the pocket. And they had more 148s. I'm sorry. They had more resisting arrest. They had more uses of force. Nobody respected them.
Right.
And then they switched to a traditional blue suit with leather.
Because they look like Macy's security.
Because they And then you switch to, you know, Reed and Malloy blue suit with leather, and you get out of that car. I mean, you hear the gear when you get out of that car. And you're like, that, I always tell, well, that reminds every single person all the shit you brought to the party to play with should they forget.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's if anybody told me we're going to give you a polo shirt and a Toyota Camry to go be a cop, I'd say hell no. But they said we're going to give you a Crown Vic with red and blue lights on the top and a cool badge and a gun. Oh, now I'm in.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's cool.
I remember, you know, you're bringing back all these memories, but I remember one of my very first training officers, and he was, when you say Reed Malloy, this guy was 6'2", probably weighed 165 pounds. 5 pounds of it was his mustache. This dude wore,
don't knock the mustache.
No. This bro, you got nothing.
Oh, puts me to shame.
You got
puts
nothing.
Me to shame. I know.
I mean, nothing. But this
Zohan
guy,
is just for the listeners. Zohan is growing a mustache. It has to come off tonight.
It comes off tonight.
But you've been growing this for quite a while.
Can we work that into the show?
That's not a week.
Can we do like a live show?
We should, dude. Oh, we should show you shaving the stash. Yeah,
right. I could do that. I could post it.
Sign up through Patreon and donate $3 right now if you want to watch him shave his stash.
But this guy was he never let me drive because probationers don't drive.
Right.
Long sleeves and a tie every single day.
Yeah, that was me.
Chuckle boots. Yeah. Chukka boots.
Right.
Chukka boots. And all he carried to the car was his riot helmet and a ticket book because that's all he needed.
Right.
And he carried a 6-inch Smith & Wesson revolver. And I'll tell you what, that man got out of the car and it was like the music stopped.
Right.
And nobody messed with him, you know, because he when you said cop. That's what you were talking about was that guy.
Did you work with Bumper Morgan? What the hell?
Almost. And the irony of it is I was sitting in a local cafe here about two or three months ago, and here he comes.
Wow.
And now he's got to be 75, 76, maybe 77 years old. And I literally jumped up out of the booth
right.
and almost came to attention because I'm like, oh, my God, here he comes.
For me. That's the respect you had for that man.
Yeah.
You know, he probably had hash marks from his wrist to his elbow.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
That's a dying – that's a dead breed.
Yeah.
So I have a question for JR.
Yeah.
So hypothetically, you have a son
hypothetically
that's 18 years old.
Okay.
And he wants to go to the Marine Corps and be a cop. What do you tell him?
Hypothetically, hypothetically, it's ironic that you say that. You're of two minds. You're of two minds. One that you're flattered and that you're honored that you've instilled that feeling into your child. And on the other side, you're scared shitless,
right?
because you know, like we were talking about earlier, you're literally, you know, one trigger press away from federal prison or being made an example of, or, you know, the community, quote unquote, the community in whole just hates you.
Right.
You know, just hates you. The things that are said to police officers, you know, these days for nothing more than wearing a uniform or doing their job.
Right.
You know, my grandfather, my dad would tell me stories of my grandfather walking up to people in the grocery store in, you know, a t-shirt and shorts and looking at them and going, hey, your ass is wanted. You'd be standing in front of the police station tomorrow morning. Don't make me come look for you. And they'd be there.
Hell yeah, they would.
Because
you didn't want them to come look for you.
You didn't. You know, there was a respect for law and order because, you know, we needed it. But yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough decision to make. But you know what? There's your heart just swells and you go, yeah, that's awesome. Now go somewhere else.
It's a different view, right?
My old man told me. When I told him, he said, I wanted so many better things for you. And I was like, what? And he goes, that being said, I'm so proud. You know, it's I wanted you to do better things than that. But at the same time, I'm really proud of you, son. You know,
yeah, it's conflicted, isn't it?
It's very conflicted.
Yeah.
Very, very, very conflicted.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you telling us your Somalia stories. Those are amazing. Would you come back sometime and tell us?
Yeah, no,
some
absolutely.
Other great
absolutely. I'll make up some more. Somalia,
guarantee,
make up some more stuff.
Yeah. Make up some more. Hey, never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
No, we never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
It's funny. You know, well, I was, you know, just a final thought is to tag up on what you just said about the kind of old days of you be at the police station or I'll come looking for you. Wasn't there a time, and this obviously was before my time, I don't know if you guys caught the tail end of this in your early years of your career, but there was a time where if the police had to come and get you, they were bringing an ass whooping with them.
Oh, that was the rules, especially if you ran.
Yeah,
right.
You ran. You better not.
Yeah.
And
not
it was
catch you.
Like even the bad guys were like, oh no, I deserve that ass whooping. I ran.
Hey, let me tell you something. There are guys that have gotten their asses kicked, duly so, getting their asses kicked. We've put them in the car and taken them home, shook their hands, mutual respect.
Right.
Hey, don't let's not fight again. He's like, yeah, man, I deserve that. All right, I'll see you later. Bye.
Yeah.
Drop them off at home.
Well, the days of...
has happened.
The days of even the karate, you know, when you apply it to somebody, they'll go out 6 seconds later, they come back and they're like, man, I'm sorry, I was an asshole. They're in cuffs and they're in the back of the car safely and they're not dead. And nobody else is dead. Nobody else is hurt. But they're like, yeah. You know, it resets their brain. They apologize, you know, or whatever. It's amazing to me how the old ways were in so many ways were so much better. And it just people didn't like it's mean, you know, or whatever. And it's became mean.
Yeah, but it's a dirty job.
It is a dirty job. Well,
dirty,
what we say, it's
job.
Like sausage. Yeah. Just enjoy the sausage. Don't watch how it's made. Law enforcement and the military, it's like sausage. Yes. So, all right. So, Zohan, we're at the end of another episode of War Stories. And a fun episode it was.
It was a great episode. Also, what was also great?
What else?
This last weekend, I was taken out by Hooks and Heroes Project, who does free fishing trips for veterans. So I just wanted to give them a shout out real quick.
Did you catch anything?
We did. Yeah, we caught a bunch of rockfish, you know, little stuff. But it was a lot of fun. It's cool to be out there with three or four dudes that I'd never met before. And
well, if you did pay for it, you could write it off because it was recruiting for the show. Hopefully,
it was because we do have a few guys that we're probably going to have on the show now. But anyways, they take you out fishing for free if you're a veteran. They sell hats on their Instagram. All the proceeds go to taking all the veterans
out.
They're
cool hats, too.
Sick hats.
They're cool hats. They got like a fishtail and the flag and stuff. And they got camouflage ones and stuff like that. I like them.
So I just wanted to give them a shout out. It was a really good time and definitely recommend it to guys that, you know, especially, you know, I got a lot of these guys that are, and something that I learned on this trip, a lot of these guys that are 100% disabled and kind of lost. And that's really who he's targeting. And, you know, getting them out there, getting them to meet new people and getting
reconnecting
out of
with their, you know, fellow
of course,
man again.
Right. And like we were talking about, you know, when you're telling stories and you want to talk to certain people, you want to talk to the right crowd. And he's putting those people together, which is really cool. So I wanted to give him a shout out.
Yeah. No. How do you find him?
What did I say? Hooks and Heroes Project.
Hooks and Heroes Project.
It was Hooks and Heroes Project. They have their own Instagram and Facebook.
Okay.
And you just click the link on their Instagram and, it'll set you up on their portal.
And I shared something on Facebook, just recently. You won't know when that was cause we don't know when this is going to air, but, I had an interview with a very well-known member of law enforcement, and he was also plugging a project called the Wounded Blue Foundation. Mm. And there's a documentary on Amazon called The Wounded Blue. It's out right now. The documentary is about officers who are wounded either mentally or physically in the line of duty and how abandoned their departments then treat them. And you know, it was brought to my attention that there are some states where PTSD may be recognized for military veterans as a disabling work-related, combat-related condition, but not in law enforcement. And so he was explaining to me, this member of the law enforcement community was explaining to me that there are still places where guys will walk into their chief and say, "I'm struggling right now and I need some help." And the chief will say, "That's great. You should get that help. Also, you're fired. Give me your badge and gun." Mm-hmm. Because you can't do the job, you're unfit for duty, and goodbye.
Yep.
Which to me, again, unconscionable.
It's a crime.
I just can't believe that exists. So if you can, they're putting this foundation together. It's at the very beginning stages. It's called the Wounded Blue Foundation. You can reach them at thewoundedblue.org. You can watch their documentary. The gentleman who's running it is a gentleman by the name of Randy Sutton. He worked Vegas Metro for years. And come to find out during the interview, he actually ended up medically retiring, which is a whole story in and of itself if you listen to that episode. But
nice.
He was very gracious. We had the interview, so you could check them out. How can they find us? How can they support us? How can they follow us?
Follow us on Instagram at War Stories Official and War Stories on Facebook. We're on, was it Stitcher, Podbean?
Yep.
What was the one?
iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, pretty much any podcast
them.
Format, right. You can follow us. Like us and subscribe. Seriously, I can't even explain the way the podcasting ratings work. If you like us, you give us a rating and you comment and subscribe, that actually pushes us out there and says, "Hey, this is growing. People are liking this. Maybe you should check it out too."
Right.
So that really helps us grow the podcast for people to like.
And the more it grows, the more we can start pumping out these episodes.
That's right. Yeah. We want to do this weekly instead of every other week. Mm-hmm. And so when we get to that point, we'll let you know. We also have a Patreon up. And we have if you want to support us by getting a t-shirt, that's great. None of us are really making a dime off of this right now. We're just doing it because we love it. But tpublic.com, you know, search War Stories. We got two t-shirts available. And then we're setting up the Patreon so people can get bonus content. We're figuring out the bonus content. We've got some ideas for some short stories where you can access some of these. We all have a ton of stories, but some of them are, you know, pretty quick, pretty funny. So if we can put these side stories, these short stories together into their own little episodes, and you can access them through, you know, supporting us at Patreon and stuff like that. So we got a lot of cool things planned. Anybody have anything out salty?
No. Nice to see you again, Jim.
Likewise, brother. Always. Yeah. Always. Yeah.
Thanks.
Always. This is still weirding me out. But
it's, being in between the father and son.
Old guy? Same guy.
It's the 10-year challenge in person.
Yeah, right?
It's, like real, bookends, it's funny because some people that do listen to the podcast that know both of us, they can't tell sometimes who's speaking.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess when I listen to it, I can tell who's speaking, but if I wasn't sitting in there editing it the whole time, I might not be able to tell either.
Right.
So
I think like there's one guy here and he's having a good conversation with himself.
That's right. That would be an amazing podcast if it was one guy doing all the voices simultaneously. I'd pay to see how that was filmed. All right. Well, until our next episode, we always say come home with your shield or on it.
See you later.
See you. Later.